Good morning, and good morning to people watching and listening. I hope everyone had a fantastic week. I actually don't have a cold opening on Brad's face. If you could see, he's like expecting something, but because I didn't really have like a cold opening, I thought I'd make it mysterious and like make it seem like I'm about to do something wacky. I do have a good episode for us though. So there's that. Did you, I guess this is I guess now that I thought of this, this could be a cold opening, but did you see the news about the whole Mark Sanchez thing?
No. Who is Mark Sanchez?
Oh, really? Oh, he's a former football, like, yeah, if you Google it, he's an NFL analyst and a former football player, and it's kind of a crazy story. I didn't know if you'd been following or not, but yeah, kind of
Nope.
interesting. There's some crazy news stories going around, so if you got time later tonight, maybe look them up. But
I
anyways,
am in a I'm in a phase of my life where I am watching the least amount of news possible.
well, it's not even just like, I don't even mean just watching news on like a TV or something. Like, it's on social media, and like that's where we get our news now, right? Like, isn't it kind of, I mean, don't you think it's kind of interesting how like where we get our news has shifted so much in the last 10 years?
I mean, yeah.
And the government
Like,
still shut down, so we've got that going on too. So the world's crazy right
yeah.
now. But hey, we can induce, I should say, introduce.
Induce
No, we can
what?
introduce some normalcy for people by
There is no
give.
normal in these episodes. It's just chaos from start to finish every time.
But that's normal for us. So that's what I'm saying. We're going to introduce some normalcy.
Standard.
So
It's standard.
this episode idea came from Hannah Clausen, who is one of the directors here at Macros Inc. And I really liked the idea of doing the episode because I thought it's something we can all relate to, I think, in some way. So this episode, I'm calling it Identity Beyond Numbers. But before we get to the heart of the matter, we should probably define, like, what do I mean by this and what are we going to talk about? So, we spend a lot of time and effort trying to lose weight, trying to get fitter, trying to accomplish whatever your goals are, right? And you can get sort of caught up in thinking that that's who you are. But one of the points Hannah brought up, which I liked, was, you are someone beyond just your weight, just the way you look, and the beliefs you have about yourself as far as what weight you should be, and but so there but there's so much identity tied to your weight and your fitness level or how you look that, like I said, it can become difficult to untie yourself from that and remember other things and like have an identity outside of that. And so we're going to dive into that. I thought it was a good opportunity for some maybe some deeper discussions, like where do these beliefs come from? Why do we believe them? What was our upbringing like? The people that were around us, how does this all happen and how do we get here? And then what can we do about it? So yeah, today's not really all about the usual stuff that we talk about where it's usually science-based. This is probably a bit more philosophical, which for some people, I think you're gonna like that. So that's what we're going to discuss. I think, today, maybe where I'd like to start, and I want to get your perspective on this, is when you talk about the beliefs about who we are and what matters to us and how we see ourselves. Obviously those things are shaped by our childhood and the way how we grew up and the people around us and the environment and all of that stuff. But, the way we see ourselves too is also different than how other people see us. But what do you think is the biggest factor for, well, this probably isn't a biggest factor, but like, what are your thoughts overall on just how these beliefs are sort of formed in the first place and like the things you believe about yourself, right? Where do they come from? Are they your own beliefs? Are they other people's beliefs about you that you agreed with, right? That you agreed to believe? There's a lot that goes into that. But when we talk about just these beliefs about ourselves, where do you think they mostly come from?
It's always a combination of the internal narrative you have plus how you interpret what other people say about you.
And how much do you think
the older you get, well, I don't want to say older, the more you develop as a person, I think the better you get at your identity being a self-constructed narrative than what you assume other people are thinking about you. I think a lot of people have an identity that they've created based on what they think other people think about them.
Do you have people in your life that still treat you a certain way based on how you were in, let's say, high school or your younger days, where you know in your mind that you're like, that's not me anymore, but that's how they treat me?
You know, what's interesting is, with the exception of like my parents, right? I have been fairly intentional about when relationships get to a point in my life where they are no longer like appropriate for the person I've become, they're just no longer there, right? So those people who I haven't talked to in maybe 10, 15, 20 years probably still think I'm the same person. But like, I think that's a big part of your development as a person and how you change your identity, is you continue to evolve the people you spend time with.
Yeah. And so much of what we think about ourselves and the goals that we have come from these beliefs about, well, first of all, it's, what do I value? And our audience, and yeah, I'm generalizing here, but women more than men seem to value the weight loss, like losing weight. Like, we know that's a thing that women try to do more often than men, and so there's a higher value there among women. Why do we think that is, right? Like, where does that come? And that is, like, is that, as a society, obviously you've got marketing, you've got advertising, you've got as a culture, we put, you know, these beautiful people that are fit and thin and up on a pedestal, and they're in our ads, and so they sort of give this impression that this is how you're supposed to look, but that seems to disproportionately affect women more than men. And maybe that's not entirely the case, but, you know, our clientele is about 80% women. So it, you know, the numbers are there, but why do we think that is?
I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I think it goes down from everything from like evolutionary biology to cultural pressure.
Expand on the evolutionary biology part. What do you mean? I think I know what you're hinting at, but I think that's interesting. Like, what do you mean specifically?
I'm going to butcher every definition in this, like, because I'm not an evolutionary biologist and I don't spend a lot of time like thinking about the definitions, but I think,
sure,
you know, the reality is the like stereotypical visual image of what most, like, when we see women are like, oh, I want to look like this person, right? Or men are like, this is who I'm attracted to. It corresponds to a phenotype that generally has the highest chance of productive offspring, right? Mm-hmm. They're not too skinny, right? Because we know reproductive biology has like this optimal spot where it's like, you don't carry too much body adiposity, you don't have too little, you have enough like physical capacity to survive in the environment. Like, we have, that's part of like the evolutionary biology trait, right? And then there's also just the social cultural stigma. And we can see this. Like, if you look at what was considered like ideally beautiful in the 1900s, 1920s, 1940s, 1960s, 1980s, 2000, 2020, like, it changes over time, right? So part of it is culturally driven. And so it's a combination of all of those things. And then it's like, there's all the family pressure. There's the social dynamics. There's, you know, friend groups there. I mean, there's all sorts of pressures. And, you know, I think the reason that maybe we see it discussed more among women than men is it's for a lot of reasons. One, I think men don't talk about stuff. Like, that's pretty clear, right? We just kind of
internalize it,
carry on, right? And so I think that's a big part of it. There's just so many reasons. Like, it's not singular. It's so multifactorial.
For sure.
All over the board. And I think it varies person to person too, within the group.
One of the reasons I asked you to expand on the biological part of it is, I don't remember where I read this. I mean, I think I've just heard this from multiple sources, but, you know, human beings, one of our innate drivers is to, like, produce offspring, right? Like, not everybody, but, like, one of the biological things that drives us is to survive, right? And to go procreate. And that's, you know, we see that in the animal kingdom, and evolution has us just, where you're supposed to, you know, procreate and have more and live on. And so there is that internal drive in us. And so
this is your self-bias speaking, because you have 500 kids. So just let everybody know that.
True. Good point. But the point that I was making is what I've read and have heard is, you know, when men and women try to go look good, you know, for each other, the goal there is to attract a mate, right? Like, you're trying to, like, go out and look good and attract someone. And the driver for why do I want to look good for someone and go attract a mate is because I, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, you're supposed to procreate, right? Like, you're supposed to, if you look at the animal kingdom, females attract a male and then they procreate, and that's just they're driven by that. And humans are not an exception to that. So my bringing this to my overall point is, do we think this ideal concept of beauty and how you're supposed to look is really a result of that internal drive of attracting a mate and procreation, right? To live on.
You know, what's interesting though is, I mean, I don't disagree with that, but I think there's maybe another layer to it that's a little more new. Like, if you look at, we talked about this before, like, look at the birth rates.
Yeah.
Like, we're now, like, barely
declining
replacement level.
I think it's below replacement level now.
And what's interesting is the things in our society now that reflect, like, winning in our environment, right? Like, niche dominance. We have socioeconomic status, career achievement, all those things are inversely correlated with birth rate in most societies, right? And so we're actually, I think what we're experiencing is a lot of the things that used to be tied, and when I say used to, I'm talking about, like, deep biology, tens of thousands of years ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago. Sorry, I'm going to sneeze. I feel like that's losing its importance for how we make decisions. And what's really making decisions is winning, dominance, status in today's society. And it all looks very different, right? I mean, like, I don't know how controversial we want to get here, so I'm going to try to keep this on the rails. But what are the things that men do now to flash status? They buy exotic cars. They post pictures of themselves on jets. They buy expensive watches. They date a bunch of women at one time. You know, those sorts of things. And the reality is, that doesn't attract a mate.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it attracts a different type of status and attention. And so I think what's really interesting is a lot of this search for identity, to go back to the, like, original topic, is actually related to us finding value and trying to seek status in a world where that is now the number one currency. Right? I mean, like, there's kind of the old adage of guys don't go to the gym to get buff to impress women. They do it to like have their bro ask how much they bench, right? They don't spend $500,000 on a car because some woman cares about it. They do it so like they can flex on the other dudes. I mean, sure. I think a lot of that also then kind of corresponds to women too, of like they kind of have their own status competition games. I'm not a sociologist. This is just kind of my very brief description of what I think is happening. And so I think a lot of this identity is in the self-worth in my own circle category versus kind of the old biology state, right? I think there's still like the biology piece, but I think a lot of it is where we fit into our hierarchy of people around us.
You know, what's so funny is one of the things you said, this is slightly off topic, but you mentioned it, is the people that I've talked to that own like supercars, like Lamborghinis and stuff. It's funny because they're always, the one thing that they say is, dude, this car attracts way more guys than women. They're like, I just get all guys that talk about it. The guys want to come talk to me, right? So that just attracts way more guys. The women don't seem to care about it. Like, they're like, yeah, it's a cool car. But like, no, I attract way more guys coming to talk to me than women. So just kind of thought that was, that's true. Have you noticed that with your Bugatti?
Yep. My Chevy Silverado.
But anyways, so yeah, I think so. Okay. So piggybacking off of all that, what do I kind of want to, I mean, in every episode, I want to give people some value here, but I think for people that are caught up in the, I am someone who needs to lose weight and you've been doing it for so long. Like, I don't know what the exact data says, but like the people that become clients with us, I mean, if you had to guess, how long do you think they've been working on trying to lose weight? 10 years, 5 years, 1 year, 2 years? Like, I know that varies, but like most of the people that work with us have been trying to do this for a long time, right? And you can
a lifetime, most people.
And you can get right, and you can get caught up in that. And you're like, man, I'm just like, this is who I am now. But obviously your self-worth is, and your identity is, as we've said, more than just that. So why don't we dive into some like actual tips and guidance on like, you know, what would you recommend for people that look, keep your eye on the, on what matters outside of just your weight, what the number says. Like, I think those things are important, right? So, you know, what advice would you have for clients that, you know, if you had clients right now and someone's saying, I'm struggling with this, like, what do you got for me? What are some reminders? Like, how do I need to reshape my thinking so that I'm not just tying my self-worth to how I look or that number on the scale?
I mean, I think it comes down to the same conversation you have around a lot of domains in life, right? Like, why are most people who become billionaires fairly miserable, right? Why are most people who reach the actual apex of their career miserable? Why is it that the people who, you know, win the Mr. Olympia with the perfect body, you know, are often miserable? It's like there is the part of this journey in which you're chasing like self-worth, self-appreciation, feeling like you're somebody who is of value. And I think a lot of times we start this journey indexing that on what the outcome is, right? And whether that's you're chasing the dollar, you're chasing the career status, you're chasing, you know, the physique, you're chasing the number on a scale. And it's whenever you index your self-worth to that outcome is where I think a lot of us, that's the initial start of the journey for a lot of people, is what they think is going to happen. But the best thing is, once you start on that journey, somewhere along the way you realize the self-worth really comes down to you developing the integrity of being the person who does the things they say they're going to do. Right? And so I think a lot of it is you tell yourself, hey, I'm going to be somebody who values the body I live in. Right? And so you then start making the choices congruent with that identity. It's like, oh, I do get up and I do exercise. Oh, I do value the food that I put into my body. Oh, I don't go out and drink way too much. Oh, I do all these things. It's the same thing kind of with your career, right? You're like, oh, I'm somebody who can value hard work and discipline and resilience and grit. It's like what it really becomes down to is along the way, do you become the person who develops a stack of evidence that you are who you say you are? And I think that's a huge part of like where the actual happiness in the journey comes in.
Well, so are you suggesting that, you know, when you say that, okay, most millionaires, billionaires are miserable. The guy who just won Mr. Olympia, miserable. It's like you're bringing up these examples. So much of what we seem to chase that we think is going to make us happy is not actually the thing that ends up making us happy. Like, is that kind of what, I mean, you get somewhere and you're like, I mean,
no, I think like, what I think it is people assume the outcome is going to make them happy. Right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, isn't that the same thing? Because if you,
right. It's, here's the thing. You can derive a huge amount of self-happiness and self-worth out of the process of creating the body you want. And the outcome can be a huge part of your happiness, right? But if along the way, you just did all the things and then looked in the mirror and you go, oh, I'm not happy. Part of that is when you've just indexed to the outcome and the outcome is your identity. So now all you've done is you've shifted your identity to I am a person who is overweight to I am a person who is thin.
Yeah.
Right. You haven't really changed anything but the number on the scale, right? It's just like you haven't really changed anything but the number in your bank account. You haven't changed anything but the trophy that's on your
So you're suggesting the answer, right? The answer is what?
I mean, the answer is, do you develop the proof you are who you say you are along the way?
How do you know what that is? How do you know what that looks like?
I mean, let me give you an example that I think maybe will make sense to you. You probably place a decent amount of self-worth and value in your life right now on being a good father to your children, right? Okay.
Very much.
Part of that is the outcome of your kids being good people.
Yep.
Okay. So let's say 30 years from now, one of your daughters wins the Nobel Prize for curing cancer. Amazing outcome, right? Now, what if she became the person to do that because during her childhood, you were never present, you neglected her, you were an abusive father, like all those things. Or it's like, and she became that out of a reaction to like, I don't want to be anything like my dad, right? Or you were present, you helped raise her, you developed all these skills of being a good dad along the way, and now her outcome is a reflection of who you actually became and that you became the person that you said you're going to become on the journey. Right? So that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So for people that are in this journey right now, trying to lose weight, you're suggesting it's really,
and I don't think this is your, what is your focus during the journey? Right.
Yeah. Like you're saying to fall in love with the process is part of it is, I think
remember
you have
that. Remember that the actual goal here is who you become along the way, right? It's there's a saying of like, you've already done the things that you said would make you happy, but you're not happy.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, what are you indexing on?
How often do you personally stop? Like, how often do you find yourself in life just like questioning beliefs along the way? Like, do I actually think that anymore? Do I believe, like, do you ever stop and just like question, you know, your own self and like kind of your own beliefs and your own logic and just maybe discard things you used to not believe and you pick up new ones that you didn't used to believe and now you do, right? Like, yeah, do you find yourself changing that often?
I'm on record several times saying I'm a big believer of use things that are useful, maybe even if they're not true.
That's interesting. I mean, we kind of do that anyway as humans, right? Like we believe what we think is useful, right? We make, like, that's what we do. So that's interesting. You have any example?
Oh man.
I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but
I'm trying to think of a good example I've used before that would apply to this conversation.
We can come back to it. I mean, you don't, if you can't think of anything, no big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I think like in the context of, let's say in the context of just like nutrition, right? It is objectively true that we live in a society in which eating in a manner that allows you to control your body weight is fairly difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's true. What is useful is, okay, but it's still 100% on me to make the right choices. Right?
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, and we've talked about that ad nauseum, I feel like, which it's a core tenet for sure. What about tying, like, so we were talking about values earlier, you know, this idea of tying your identity to, well, we already do tie our identity to the things we value, right? Like family is a big one for me, right? I feel like I'm very much a family man. Love my wife and my kids. We spend a lot of time together. Like just anchoring this concept of your identity to the things you value. Could be family. It could be the things that you create. It could be, maybe it's your faith. Maybe it's your career. Maybe it's some sort of service that you provide to people. There's so many other things I think you can tie your identity to outside of the scale, but I'm just curious for you personally. And I don't think I've ever asked you this like outside of anywhere really, but like, what's like the biggest thing you tie your identity to? And some, like, as far as like what you value, maybe not the biggest, or just like, what are some big things that you personally tie your identity to in terms of what you value? This is kind of my own personal curiosity just about you.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, and that changes as your life changes, right?
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think it's being a good human, being a good husband and father, extracting the most out of what the skills I've been given. And I think that's like, those are like the top, right?
Any that you had that you no longer have?
Man. There's just like a graveyard of old values, right? Like, it's just like, yeah, as you change, things change, right?
When you were younger, Brad, did you ever think you'd be like, was one of your goals to play in the NBA? Like, did you want to be a professional
maybe
basketball
until
player?
I was like 10, and then I realized.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So when you were an adult, okay. So it wasn't like you thought you didn't ever actually think I have a chance to play in the NBA.
No,
like it just
wasn't
one of your thoughts.
No. And that I would say is probably one of the things, like if I look back and I think about like regrets, I wish I would have had a different exposure to greatness when I was young. Because I think one of the hard parts for a lot of people and for myself is who I was as a basketball player when I was 15 and what professional basketball players, whether it's NBA, G League, overseas, to me, that gap was so unfathomable and unknowable. Mm-hmm. But now that I've seen those people and I work with those people on, like, you know, at this stage of my life, if I could rerun the tape.
Yeah.
Like, there's a path there. Now, for would sure. I have made it? Probably not. But I would have been a lot closer than I was, right? You know, obviously, like, I lack some of the, like,
physical
the
height, traits,
the length, the, you know, the natural talent, some of those things. But like the path to getting there is much more clear now that I have seen what it looks like. And I think for a lot of people, that's one of the big things, is they are where they are and to who they want to be. That gap is like so it just seems unknowable. Right.
That's like one of the catch 22s in life.
Yeah.
You can't you can't know back then what you know now, but you wish you could.
Yeah. I mean, like I think about, let's say my kid decides he wants to be a basketball player. Like his likelihood of making it to the NBA is fairly close to zero, but it's probably infinitely higher than mine was, because I can be like, hey,
well, you right.
Here's what it takes to actually get there. Mm-hmm. And here's what it would require you to do.
Right.
There's going to be a little bit of luck, right? There's going to be some things out of your control, but like, this is what it's going to take. I didn't even know what it would take.
Yeah. Right. And now you have that experience that you can pass on, and your son would be a little bit more at an advantage than you were, which I think that's great. Yeah. Who was your example of greatness growing up? Like, what was your concept of greatness? Like, was there someone you looked up to?
I mean, like, you know, when you're a kid, obviously like your parents. But I think, you know, I didn't really get to see it.
Yeah. You didn't watch I'm throwing out an example, Michael Jordan, weren't you like, man, Michael Jordan's the definition of greatness. Like as a kid.
But that, to me, that doesn't mean anything, because you're just watching something you're watching a game on TV, right? But like, you don't, what does the day of that guy look like for 30 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't know, okay, well, what did your daily life look like?
You're just
what
seeing
are
the
decisions? Yeah. And I don't think that is understanding what greatness is. Right, it's like, what is the day-to-day life of?
Because you're more interested in what did it take to get to that
right?
point. Like, what was the process like?
Yeah, I mean, like, okay. You meet Jeff Bezos on his $400 million yacht, and you're like, oh, this is greatness. It's like, no, it's not. What greatness is what did it look and feel like when you quit your job and started Amazon in this tiny little building where
his
you
garage,
ran 100
right?
feet of Ethernet cables around because you had to like connect to the internet, and you tried to sell books on the internet. Like, what did that look like? What did that feel like? What did your day look like? What were the decisions you made? And so, you know, to tie that back to like the identity piece, I think that's a big part of when we have clients who come in, and maybe they have a history of whatever dieting, right? They did Weight Watchers when they were a kid with their mom. They've bounced from yo-yo diet to yo-yo diet. They've done like an infinite amount of P90Xs and things like that. But they don't know what life looks like when they feel like they're in control of everything. And we can't just tell you, oh, this is what it looks like. It's like, okay, I know what it feels like to be where you're at. Here's what the process looks like and what it takes. Here's what that process feels like. Here's what a day is going to look like. Here's what a week's going to look like. Here's what your setbacks are going to look like. And as you move from where you are to here, like this process is, we're taking it from unknowable to knowable. And like the identity you build in that is a lot of like, oh, okay, now I'm the person who's actually on this path.
So do you think that real transformation starts like, when you actually see yourself differently, like where and when does it start? How does it start? Don't you think it's this concept of, so everything we've talked about, like I'm making the decision to now see myself differently. Does it start right there?
Yeah. And I think everybody's journey is a little bit different. I think some people can be like, okay, I'm different today. Right. I think other people require a huge amount of evidence that they are who they say they are before they believe it. Right. Okay. Like on one example, like I think David Goggins was a great example. As crazy as that dude is, like he basically woke up one day and was like, okay, now I'm this person.
Mm-hmm.
And like never looked back. I think other people, they have to be faced with a lot of challenges and make decisions that are congruent with this new version of themselves before they believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. What? consider how, so like our coaching in general helps with a lot of things, but think about how, think about the worth and the value of having a coach who can, who like how they influence exactly what we're talking about, how they influence how you see yourself, what you think about yourself, and how they shape who you want to become. I think that's a very underrated aspect of coaching, because traditionally when you think of coaching, you know, you think someone who's going to tell me my numbers and show me how to hit this and show me how to meal prep and show me how to do this, this, and this. But it's like a coach can really help you shape your identity for who you want to be, right? I think that's just such an underrated aspect that we don't really think of. So like, if you're wanting to become someone different, if you want to reshape your identity, just having that external person to help you do that can be huge, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, think about it this way. Let's go back to the basketball analogy, because apparently that's the only thing I know. Say somebody when I was a kid said, okay, if you ever want to play in the NBA, you have to be able to shoot 40% from three, 50% from the field, 90% from the free throw line, and your offensive efficiency rating has to be X. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's better than not knowing anything, right? That's the equivalent of like, oh, okay, well, to lose weight, like you need to eat X amount of calories, walk this many steps, and do that for 6 months. Okay. Now, imagine if when I was 15, somebody said, okay, here's all the skills you're going to need to develop between now and 22 years old. Here is a timeline of like when it's appropriate to build those skills. Mm-hmm. Here are the types of workouts you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you need to structure a day, a week, a month, a season. Here's probably the setbacks that are going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a bad week, you have a shooting slump, and it's like, oh, okay, well, like, here's how you mentally get out of that. This is what the coaching is, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay.
It's a roadmap, essentially.
You weigh 280 pounds right now. You want to weigh 180. In 3 years, you want to be able to compete for a physique show. Okay, well, like, here's all the skills we're going to have to build, right? We're going to have to develop, like, you'll have to learn how your body works. You're going to have to learn how to control a calorie deficit. You're going to have to develop nutritional literacy. You're going to have to learn how to train first to like lose body weight. And then you're going to have to learn how to train to build muscle. And then you're going to have to learn how to train for a physique show. You're going to have to learn how to pose, manipulate water. Like, there's all these things we're going to have to learn. And here's the timeline, and here's the workouts, and here's, hey, I know probably when you get to about 60 pounds loss and it starts to slow down pretty dramatically, like you're going to start to feel really defeated. The energy is going to be really low. Like, you've probably had the first, you know, argument with your spouse about like, hey, you're a different person now and you're spending all your time at the gym and you don't want to go out to the bar anymore with me. Like, I know that's coming. Here's how we handle that situation. So it's like, that's part of the identity process.
Yeah. And I think that's why it's, I think of the phrase, you know, I wish I knew then what I know now. Well, having a coach is kind of the way to do that. When you think about it, like, it's someone that is, you could, for all intents and purposes, you could think of that person as your future self who's been there, done that, and is now going back in time to give you the advice and the roadmap now, so that you know the things that that you would have otherwise not known until 10 years from now, 20 years from now. So kind of an interesting way to think about that. Anything else you think would be beneficial to discuss before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I mean, I think to go back to the identity piece is, I feel like most people are always in a battle of balancing the identity that everybody, they think everybody else in their life has of them, right? And like, I'll just give you an example for when I think about like a given day, right? Let's just take like a random crazy day I have. I wake up, I'm by myself in my house, and I'm working, right? It's just me doing what I'm doing on my computer. It's just an identity that I think of myself, right? Then I have my first meeting of the day with, you know, the executives at Macros Inc. every single one of those people, like you, Jem, Jay, Heather, they all, I think that they all think I'm a different person, right? Like you have a different concept of my identity than Jem does, than Jay does, yep. than Heather does, right?
For sure.
Then let's say I wrap up work here. I have to go down to GU for practice. And I'm like, you know, interact with the head coach, the assistant coach, the strength coach, the athletic trainer, maybe the athletic director of the university who doesn't even know who I am walks by. And like I have all these interactions. I'm putting what that I think they think my identity is on me. All right. And then my wife comes home. Okay. Well, what does she think my identity is? Mm-hmm. And so I think we spend a lot of energy all day balancing this like identities of things coming in. And really, and the reality is the only one that matters at the end of the day is actually what you think your identity is. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we don't balance all these things. That's just part of what it is to be human. And what I think is an important concept of that is both in the absolute sense of like who you think you are and what other people think of you. Identity is labile, like it changes, right? And you can, I mean, you know this for an example, right? Think about your professional identity. When you were a kid, you didn't have a professional identity. Mm-hmm. When you first started your career, your identity was the young kid who didn't know anything. When you were advancing your career, you're the person who knows everything. When you're at the end of your career, you're the old guy who just wants to get out of his house and doesn't want to hang out with his wife because his marriage sucks and that's the only reason he's at work. Like, you know, all those identities change. So the actual true identity is also changeable and labile.
Yeah. And you do interact with people also, though, based on how you think they think of you. Like 100%. There is that aspect, you know, which is kind of interesting, too. It's like you don't have to act that way. At the end of the day, you can act differently based on, you know, you can act not based on what you think that person thinks of you. I don't know. It's just I like that topic. I kind of like that whole philosophical idea there. But it's true, because we do act accordingly, and sometimes against our own best interests, really.
How many times in these podcasts do you ask me questions and I give you answers that you're like, that's such a 90-degree turn from what I thought you were going to say?
Well, most of the time, but I'm also the type of person that likes to, and this is why I ask you questions, because I'm like, I have a curious mind by nature, so I want to hear what people have to say, and then I'll follow their train of thought, and then wherever we arrive, whenever that is, then I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting, and then I'll think about that for a while. So I will say that your answers, they don't go where I expect them to, but when we arrive there, I'm like, oh, this is an interesting destination. I never thought of it that way. So I kind of do, they're wild, but I like it. I like the journey. That's what's interesting to me about people is you can ask somebody something, they give you a totally different answer than the other person, and you kind of just go along with them. You're like, that's an interesting way that you see it. I don't know. I think I'm sure if it's the other way around, if I say something, you arrive at the destination with me when I say something and you're like, that's ridiculous. You're probably like, I don't know how you got here. But anyways, I don't have anything else. Can you think of anything else you'd like to say, Bradley? What about you have something pretty cool coming soon, right? You want to mention that real quick?
In 10 days from today, well, I guess 9.5 days from today, our very first full-length course is going live. More details are coming in the next few days, like pricing and all that stuff. It's going to be awesome. We are limiting spots. We have almost 3 times as many people on the pre-sale list as we have open spots. So don't dilly-dally, as my grandma would say. Mm-hmm. Make sure you sign up 8 a.m. Pacific, 10/18/2025, October 18th, 2025. And one of the books in the course, or part of the course, we cover a lot of what we talked about today. For example, there is an entire chapter on what we talked about. That chapter is titled, I've written so much stuff in the last year, I can't even remember.
Give us...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, give us a brief description on how people will benefit from this course.
Besides, you get to hang out with me quite a bit. I think that's the biggest benefit.
Obviously.
Or the reason you should buy the course. I mean, I think it's... there's a few reasons. One, I think a lot of things that people struggle with is just what is true and what is not about the
filtering out the noise. Right.
And I mean, I will toot my own horn here. I've been doing this for so long that I've been able to just filter out all the stuff that is just like not true and just give you what actually matters. So I think that's a big part of it. And then the other thing is we talk about how to apply the information to yourself. And then we talk a lot about like the stuff we talked about in this episode, like what is your identity? How do you change it? How do you build habits? So for example, chapter 5 of the art section is all about behavior change and habit formation. We talk about the anatomy of habits, identity change. We talk about like self-talk, mindsets, creating environments. We talk about troubleshooting. So a lot of what we talk about in these kind of episodes, we actually like do deep dives in, and then also give you the chance to like work through examples. So like you'll have a workbook.
Oh, don't need to be worried about how much time this takes, right? Because this is self-guided.
This is self-guided, and you'll have direct access where you can email me and ask me questions.
Excellent. Excellent.
Those are the original printed copies that have all the typos in it. And before I like went back and did the proofread, because I like, you know, when you've been typing something and you've just seen the digital version for so long that you can't see the typos anymore. You have to like print it, just, it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, what's his name from the Matrix? I don't even see people anymore. I don't even see code anymore. I just see I can't remember what the quote was. Yeah. You're like, I don't even see typos anymore. I just see a complete wall of text.
Yep.
I think it was Cypher that said that. Anyways, that's all I got. Cut. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Next week,
if anybody wants to volunteer to be a producer for the show and up our production quality, let us know. We're happily taking volunteer producers.
What does that mean?
It means that we need to level up our game. Wait for 2026.
You guys just heard Brad essentially just rip on me saying that the
current... I was saying for both of us.
I don't know. It sounds like he's saying that the current producer, me, sucks. I'm going to take this personally. And
Are you a professional producer? Is your identity a producer?
Well, no, but you can't go back on... You're trying to backtrack now. I'm 10/8/2025, Brad said, I'm a sucky producer. I'm taking that for gospel. I'm just kidding. I'm just busting your chops.
Anyways, bust my chops.
All right. We're going to duck out of here because we're just rambling at this point. So I will play our lovely outro music that Brad hates because I'm a bad producer, and we'll get out of here. Until next time, folks.